It is my honor tonight to be able to introduce our speaker, Ajahn Taniya. And I would like to, as an introduction to that, just tell you a little bit about a new foundation that has been formed, the Saranaloka Foundation, which will be a nonprofit eventually, with the intention that it will help to bring the nuns in Ajahn Chah's tradition to America to teach, and hopefully at some point to maybe have a center here where they could live and people could go and visit and stay. So Saranaloka is brand new, and if you have any questions about that, Brenda, who's sitting right over there, or I could answer your questions at the end. We do intend this year, or next year in 2007, to bring two of the nuns to America to teach across the U.S., and so that will be the first teaching tour that we'll sponsor. So tonight is very exciting for us because we haven't had one of the nuns in the tradition here for many years. Some of you may have been familiar with Ajahn Sundara, who taught here a number of times a few years back. So tonight we have Ajahn Taniya, and Ajahn Taniya has been a nun for 16 years and is the senior nun at Chithurst Monastery, or Chittaviveka Monastery, actually, in Chithurst. I just learned that tonight. She was born in New Zealand and has practiced for a number of years with a meditation group closely affiliated with Lungpur Cha and the Thai Forest tradition. This is the same tradition that Ajahn Amaro is with, if those of you who have heard Ajahn Amaro speak here also. In 1990, she went to England to join the monastic community there. And she is in America this year to teach with Ajahn Amaro a Thanksgiving monastic retreat in Santa Rosa that's happening starting next Friday. So while she was visiting us, we invited her to come and speak here tonight and be with us. So it's a great honor to have you with us. And as Maureen said before, we're going to do something slightly different tonight. And so this will be wonderful for all of us. So you can go ahead and ring the bell and take off here. For thank you.
Thank you, Jill. You do this too. Just checking the time. So talking with a few of the people here tonight, we just were talking what I might like to offer into your space, and it seemed you might enjoy actually just participating in some of the traditional chanting we do, and then meditation. I could give some short reflection and some question and answers. So realizing for some of you, you haven't had much experience of the monastic community, the Theravada monastic community, I thought just to bring some of the aspects of our life, of our practice. So part of what rounds out the kind of formal meditation are things like chanting or recollections. So we thought to do something that's actually quite straightforward is this chant I've written up here, and we'll do it. It's like a round. Yes, it's repetitive. It's in the traditional language of the Theravadan scriptures in Pali, which is a common form of Sanskrit. Yeah. So yes. So essentially, for those of you that are newish even to the concepts of the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, what we're chanting is, to the Buddha I go for refuge, giving my life to realize Nibbana. And you know, you can take Buddha as a kind of historical figure, but it's more helpful to think of Buddha as this aspect that we all have that can actually be awake, the kind of knowing quality of the mind. The sense of the knowing. So that is a place of refuge. There's the ability of the mind to know or be awake. And then the Dharma is the way things are. So we're taking refuge in the immediacy of the present moment. And the Sangha is this, is an embodied activity. Yeah. So we can see it as people, or just a simple act of waking up to the present moment, to the way things are. And this is the, this is where freedom is and the true possibility is. So it's a sense of just letting that sense of taking refuge or taking shelter in this possibility. So we chant it and let it really just start to infuse the body-mind. Yeah. It's a recollection. And it's a ongoing contemplation to know what this really means, what it feels like and the possibility it gives. Yeah. So you don't really have to understand it really, you just let the thing do you. Yeah. So if I'll just chant it, and what we keep doing is coming through the, what we'd say, the three jewels or the three refuges. And you know, you join in when you feel confident. My approach to chanting is you just chant. Yeah? Come from your heart, and the sound doesn't matter. If you keep chanting, you get this sense of entrainment, they say in drumming circles, where the thing just comes together after a while. The, you know, the art of it is just to keep relaxing, not worrying too much about the sound, and letting the heart bring it into tune. So the words are a bit foreign, I recognise, but for some of you they'll be familiar in the sense that they've got the most of the traditional refuge words in there that you may be familiar with. Buddhang saranang gacchami, you know, to the Buddha I go for refuge. So this is really, to the Buddha I go for refuge, giving my life to realise Nibbana. So the sense that we really dedicate ourselves to waking up in the present moment, freeing the mind from selfishness, coming out of confusion. So I'll chant and you just join in. I'll chant the English first, so you just hear it, and then I'll go into the Pali. To the Buddha I go for refuge, giving my life to realize Nibbana. To the Dhamma I go for refuge, giving my life to realize Nibbana. To the Dhamma I go for refuge, giving my life to realize Nibbana. Buddhang bheji vitang yava nibbanang saranang gacchami. Dhammang me jivitang yava nibbanang saranang gacchami. Sanghang me jivitang yava nibbanang saranang gacchami. Buddhang me jivitang yava nibbanang saranang gacchami. Dhammang me jivitang yava nibbanang saranang gacchami. Mi sanghang pe jivitang yava nibbanang saranang gacchami. Buddhang pe jivitang yava nibbanang saranang gacchami. Dhammang pe jivitang yava nibbanang saranang gacchami. Sanghang pe jivitang yava nibbanang saranang gacchami. nidangang vedi vetang yavanivanang sarangangata misanghang vedi vetang yavanivanang sarangangata mibuddhang vedi vetang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami dhammang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami sanghang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami buddhang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami dhammang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami misanghang mejivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami buddhang mejivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami dhammang jivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami sanghang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami buddhang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami dhammang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami sanghang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami buddhang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami sanghang vijivitang yavanivanang sarangang gacchami.
So if we just let our minds and then just settle into the body, settle into the meditation, and we'll sit together for a time.
Insights.
Lovely. Thank you. Yeah, beautiful. So take the encouragement from the chanting, just keep letting the mind rest in the present moment. You really see the refuge quality of that. So letting the chanting, letting be here, just sweep away any thoughts of what the day's held, what your life has held really, and any movement into the future. We just let the mind rest here in the present moment, but not even holding that, letting it do what it does. So this mind here, light, feeling the body, allowing the breath, letting these things just heal, rejuvenate, and gladden the mind. It can be helpful just to really consciously acknowledge you're in a place of safety, of okayness, with people committed to waking up. And so letting the group support you, the place support you. You can really let go. the sounds come and go, just notice what happens for you. If there's any tightening in the body, any withholding in the mind, any hardening of the mind. Just letting what's here be here and relaxing. And just keeping noticing that which can know, that which knows the sound, knows the sensation. So we keep in our refuge and let the objects of mind come and go as they will. And just let the loveliness of not fighting with whatever is happening gladden the mind.
Is everything that's happening welcome? Just notice. Notice the habits of mind that so often have a sense things should be other than they are. Can we just welcome what is going on? Put down resistance, put down grasping, put down ideas, let the mind open. And just be here.
Pati Saram Pati Katanjali Ayi Varan Ayachata Santida Sata Praja Kajatika Deve Tu Daman Anukampimam Pajam.
Buddhasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Buddhasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Buddhasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Bhutang Dhammang Sanghang Namassami.
So it's very lovely to have Ayatataloka come from the Fremont Center. Some of you will have met her before because you've spoken here, haven't you, sister? Sister Carol, I haven't got a new name, but she's just recently taken robes. So they're your local nuns. What our friends just chanted is a traditional invitation to give a Dhamma teaching. Very beautiful. And it was chanted at the time of after the Buddha's enlightenment. And it's a very helpful thing to recollect, to keep in mind as we pick up the teaching. So essentially it's translated as that the Brahma, one of the gods of celestial realm, Sahampati, with hands joined in Anjali, which is a sign of respect, came to the Buddha and said to the Buddha, because the Buddha had thought, you know, the teaching that he'd understood, that he'd penetrated, was too difficult for beings to understand. You know, it went so much against the flow of our habits. So he hesitated about teaching. So the Brahma Sahampati came and said, you know, Lord, there are beings with little dust in their eyes. Please teach out of compassion. So it's this, and this is a traditional invitation, so that the teaching is given out of compassion. Or the whole Buddha's teaching, the whole thing was an act of compassion right at the very beginning. And it seems critical that we really recognize that as we pick it up ourselves and use it, that our practice, our spiritual inquiry, whatever meditation we do, is out of compassion. You know, it's not because we're not good enough and need improving or something. No, it's not. It's none of this. It's just simply recognizing that, you know, our hearts hurt, and that through ignorance we're also hurting other beings, and that we want to be able to wake up and come out of that, you know, for our own well-being and for the well-being of others, for the well-being of the planet. Yeah. So it's this simple recognition of dukkha or suffering, and, you know, wanting to free ourselves out of it. Yeah. So as we're practicing over the, you know, days, months, years, we need to really know why we're doing it. Yeah. You know, because if we don't keep it true in this way, you know, the thing, you know, practice, meditation, it becomes something we're not prepared to do anymore. It becomes another thing we're failing at. another thing we're not doing quite right. And we can sit in meditation, have a sense of, it's not going how it should, or somehow something's going wrong, not good enough, it's not good enough, all of this. And it arises from having missed the original point. So just to notice if you get this experience of feeling a bit defeated, or you get so actually you know you should be meditating, but the alarm goes off in the morning, say, and you think, no, I really can't bear it. And this arises, so say, from kind of views and wanting and not really connecting with the sense that it actually makes a difference. I feel better when I spend some time just being with myself, tending to my heart. Don't even call it meditation. Just the sense of what it does when we just spend a bit of time feeling how we feel, letting whatever has happened in the day, in the week, whatever, just settle. So we come out of the kind of stress and agitation of our lives, the kind of disconnection that can be there. And just feel what it feels like, to be here now with whatever's been happening. And this is a great kindness. When you really just stop, you start feeling what it feels like. There's such a relief there. So we're not quietening, we're not stopping, we're not opening the mind in meditation, as a self-improvement plan or something like that, or because we should, it's a good idea. It's because it feels good. Whether what we have to open to is painful or not, it just feels good to stop running. Just to be here, feeling what's going on, and letting it settle and release. Because, as you know, when you actually are with something, it starts changing. It may have been contracted and tight, the kind of sense of being let down or whatever. As you sit there, it just starts to soften and open. So deeper than the sense of being let down, there are other things we need to feel through and just set the mind open. And then we just come into the sense of being present and the loveliness of that. So like I was encouraging in the meditation, you can notice the resistance, the heart kind of tightening. It doesn't want the sound, it doesn't want the pain. It doesn't want what's going on, say. And just how agitating that is. And what it's like if you're actually just open, letting the train whistle blow. It's not a problem. It doesn't have to be quiet. It doesn't have to be anyway. We're just being with what is here. Letting that touch us. And as experiences that come through the sights, sounds, feelings in the body, touch, you start to realise what they're actually touching, which is the mind itself, which isn't these things. It isn't the thoughts. It's not the feelings. It's of a completely different nature. And this we need to experience for ourselves. You do it by just not making a problem about what's going on and recognising that which knows. And the more we strengthen this capacity we have just to be awake to what is happening, the freer we become. It really gets so it doesn't matter what's going on. We're able to be present with it. Compassionate. It's here. It can't be any other way. You know? Through conditions, things arise. They're here. There's no advantage in trying to push them away or pretend they're not happening. You know, the train goes past, the whistle blows. And you know, that's nature, isn't it? So we let what's here be here. It's you know, and it's with this quality of what we call metta karuna, you know, loving kindness, compassion. Because you recognize, when you start to really investigate, you cannot awaken to what you're not willing to be with. You know? So how can you know something you're not prepared to let into consciousness? So we realize we've got to come out of that kind of paradigm of, you know, things should be this way, they shouldn't be that way. I want this, I don't want that. Into just our sense of, here it is. And I can be with it. And we do this with small things, yeah, that don't really matter. You know, the sounds coming in from outside or whatever. And it strengthens our confidence to do it with things that are more heart-wrenching. People going that we love. Things that are happening that are very distressing. We get so we just have the capacity to feel it, know it, but be resting in a sense of refuge. You know, we talked about before we did the chanting, that we can actually be present and awake. And from that place, all kinds of possibilities are born in terms of how we respond. You know, you'll all have known the times when you've actually been really there for something. You know, you've done the most unexpected things that have been of great benefit. Not from ideas, but just from the simple power of presence. Present with a sense of compassion, welcome. And then miracles happen. You know, the kind of miracle that comes from being awake. So as we live, as we sit, what we do anything, what we're doing is we're strengthening this ability to be present and to free the mind out of wanting this, not wanting that. So it really comes into the middle. And then feel what that's like. This is saying we're doing it out of compassion. So to really connect with that, and then to feel the kind of what a life can be like, the kind of sadness of it, and as I say, the stress of it, and just the complexity of being alive and the things that have to be dealt with, and then wanting to support ourselves in that. And to come out of conflict. I entered the States on Tuesday, I think. And the first thing that somebody said to me was the man at the customs, immigration. And he said to me, "Is your whole life committed to peace?" And I thought, it's a very good question. For each of us, is our life really committed to peace? Well, you know, the external form certainly indicates that, but what's happening here? Am I fighting with what is happening? Fighting with the sounds, fighting with the pain in my knee, or am I actually willing to come out of the war and just be here?
So, you know, just to notice for yourself, you know, is your life committed to peace?
You know, we have a question we ask each other in the monastery occasionally, you know, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And just, you know, do you want to be right or do you want your heart at peace? And you can see, even relating to yourself and relating to the circumstance of our lives, just to recognise you actually have a choice. And the habits of the mind will push us one way. So we need to upright the mind and really inquire, you know, what do we want to actually give our hearts and our life to? To our well-being, the well-being of those around us. What is something else? You know, each person's choice, isn't it? And to really be freed up in that choice, we need to do whatever we can to be as present as we can be, so that we're just not swept along by the habits of mind. So, you know, to cultivate the mind, so you really can feel and make a choice. Make a choice for your own well-being. You know the place that you can get caught, where you lack, where you lose flexibility of mind, you know, where the mind gets overwhelmed by whatever, you know, desire, aversion. And you learn to recognise how you can get caught. You know, the kind of familiar ways the mind will run. And you get so you train it so it just doesn't habitually run into aversion, anger, whatever. It runs into compassion and kindness. That's the deeper channel in the mind. You know, the unskillful habits, the channels of those have started just to silt up. And the more, every time we choose for peace, for our own well-being, the channels of self-disregard, of neglect, of aversion, silt up a little bit more. And it's like you start to tip the scales. So we keep, every time we try and keep tipping the scales, and so that, you know, it's in increasing the weight of it that moves the mind into our own well-being, you know, the well-being of those around us. So you start to recognise when you really look at your mind, it's important, you know, moment by moment, to keep making a choice. Skillful choice, and keep, you know, so that it becomes just the way the mind moves. The Buddha said, you know, what you think about becomes the habit of mind. So, you know, it's worth really taking care. So we think, we act in ways that support, that are skillful, bring ease and well-being, free the mind from regret. And it, you know, if you look at it for a lifetime, it can seem a bit overwhelming, but in each moment it's a small thing. So you just have to do it now. So realizing we need to finish, you know, nine-ish, I thought, rather than really just talking at you, which doesn't seem such a good idea, to really open the field up for questions. You know, I haven't spoken with almost all of you, so I have, you know, really don't know what to find helpful to talk about. So, if there's anything particular you'd like to raise, or you're very welcome to. Don't be frightened. Yeah, if any, anything I've said doesn't make sense, you're welcome to inquire anything you want. A bit more expounding. The danger is if you don't ask me, I ask you. Yeah.
Could you please use the microphone?
Thank you very much for your talk. Very rich for me. I regard Buddhism as a very logical thing. There's all sorts of lists, and meditation is fairly straightforward, and letting go. And I realize a part of me would really like to think that I like the Christian notion of being guided, and I would like to think that there's some sort of guidance happening in my life in the world of Buddhism. But I don't know if it's just in my own readings or whatever, but I realize I'm very... I don't have that much of a notion of being guided. What are your thoughts on whether we're being guided, whether the coincidences in our lives, whether beings make themselves our guides? Or...
Well, as much to your question, the first thing that strikes me is the sense that one of the things that guides us is our love of goodness. And this is something that, we all share. It can get a bit distorted in different ways, but if you even read the journals of some of the people that were most destructive on the planet, they thought they were doing the best they could for the people around them. Yeah. So we all have this deep movement and love of what is good. And that certainly, I would say, is a guide, a protection, a support. So it takes us into places, like it brings you here into a community of people that aspire, to freeing the heart. So that leads you, this, and also the movement to be free from affliction. There's also a powerful current that takes the mind. And then as you come into a field of people like this, then there will be people within that will support you. You could call them guides, you could call them teachers, you could call them what we call kalyana metta, good friends. My experience is that everything wants us to wake up. So as soon as you set your heart in that way, everything seems to conspire. And the deeper and truer you are in holding that, the more the forces of the cosmos rush in to support you. It's mysterious. So I wouldn't talk in terms of God, because that's not my way of framing reality, but I see that goodness, waking up, has tremendous power. So if you keep aligning yourself in that way, you have more support than you can handle.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a simple technical question. When I was meditating, my eyes were closed, so the only things open was ears. But I was not tuning into sound, but when you kept mentioning about sound, then I realized there was a train. So is it because I'm lost in my thought when I'm meditating with my ear open? Should I be listening to the sounds?
People are different, And most people, particularly when they're new in meditation, find sound very distracting. So it's actually a very useful object. But
You know, if you're present with your body, then that's what you'll be experiencing. You can only experience, one thing in one kind of consciousness at a time. So if you're deeply in the body, it's like sounds fall away. Have you got children? Like I have nieces, nephews, but if they're reading, you can go and shout in their ear, tea time, and they don't hear. Yeah? Mind is completely focused on the book. Yeah? It's the same. But why I used the sound was because the sounds are quite strong coming into the room. And as I say, often people in the beginning, sound is one of the things that will pull the mind out when the eyes are closed. It's often the next strongest consciousness. So then it's very helpful, because when you hear the sound, you can often, if you notice, you can feel it, sense of it hitting against you. And what it's really hitting against is the aversion in the mind. So you can, if you soften your aversion, you get this lovely feeling of sound just not hitting anything. And you start to be, the awareness itself becomes revealed. So in that way it's a lovely object. Particularly when you've got things as beautiful as train whistles, which are the sound of freedom. So to let that just move through the consciousness. But no, it's fine not to be hearing sounds. I don't know, you tell me, were you thinking or were you actually just with your breath and your body?
I wasn't sure, that's why I asked.
I think more the mind was moving between, actually. And that also can be happening, that catches the thought, then it comes into the body again. But we close the eyes often because the eye consciousness is so strong, pulls the mind out. But say the ear consciousness could be the next thing that will take you out of presence in the body. So I wouldn't worry about not being distracted by sound.
Another question.
Another question surrounding sound. I am easily distracted by sounds, some sounds. I backpack a lot.
You backpack a lot?
I backpack, or I go trekking, is that what you would say in New Zealand?
Tramping,
right, on the tracks. And when I'm out in the Sierra, there are no undesirable sounds, I guess I would say. There's just the wind and the water and the occasional F-16 flying over. Sometimes those aren't too often. And when I sit out there, when I'm not doing other things, if I'm just sitting, I find it very easy to sit.
Yes.
And yet, when I'm here at the Sangha, I get distracted often by those sounds. And I did like your visualization of softening to let the sound go through. And I guess I'm asking for more help.
Yes.
Because when I'm backpacking, those sounds, they go right through me. Yes. They're so pleasant and they're natural, whereas trains and motorcycles and thump, thump, thump of stereos and things really draw me out of, I guess, my body or my non-thoughts or my thoughts.
Yes.
Perhaps you could...
Yeah. So what if you notice what's happening is it's the way things are labelled, isn't it? Kind of
I'm the one that assigned it, the pleasant sound versus the unpleasant
sound. That's right. And so it can be very helpful just to play with that. And years back when I was in Thailand and they rang the bell a lot,
And I'd just practice, you know, liking the sound of the bell or liking the sound of the silence. And just seeing what happens, that you can actually choose to be attached to the silence or attached to the sound. And both of them, of course, are unsatisfactory, but you can really, you realise the way the mind tends to grasp at this thing or grasp at that. And just get so, you know, you lighten up, free it up. I mean, you know, so it likes the sounds of the stream and it doesn't like the sounds of the tractor, you know. Just to see the way we're labelling, this can be very helpful, you know. Natural sounds are okay, sounds of traffic are not okay. You know, why? You know, if you notice, you know, it's the sounds of people living, does that alter it?
What was that last word?
It's the sounds of people living. You know, that can be helpful. Then you know, rather than it's the car, it's the sounds of people's lives. Or you hear the sound of the train go past. You know, just sense, you can have a sense of gladness. This is people going home. And so you just know, you can notice just how you perceive things. Notice the changes, the feeling around them. So just in a sense, just inquiring.
So again, it comes back to the labeling you said.
Yeah.
So if, I mean, ideally if I'm truly still and present, then the sound is meaning it's superfluous.
Yes, and
it's I don't really sense it. But since I'm sensing it in a negative way, are you suggesting just try and flip that and think of it in a more positive way?
Yeah, because aversion brings an edge, like the edge of self. And we're just softening that. You know, and then you can also inquire in the way, like, you know, classic teaching of Lumpur Cha, the Thai meditation master of my family. You know, he noticed he'd be sitting here and his mind would be going out, grumbling about this sound, that sound. And he noticed, you know, that it's actually a movement of his mind. It's not the sound troubling him, it's him going out to trouble the sound. So you notice, you know, it's actually an activity of mind. It moves away from its centre, goes out to fight for something. So that's, you know, so it can be very helpful just to let whatever sound it is come in and touch you. Yeah, touch awareness. Yeah. Because what it does, it's like if when, you know, if, I don't know if you notice, when you let the train whistle come in and touch, it reveals the knowing of the mind. That which knows. Yeah. So then, you know, it has this beautiful aspect because there's this object, the sound, and there's that which knows it. And so rather than getting stuck on the objects, we make our allegiance with the knowing. Yeah. So then we don't mind what the objects are because all they're doing is more deeply revealing the knowing. Kind of mind awake here, available. So you might even like just to think in terms of actually just being more available. Yeah. Rather than having lots of preferences around. Yeah. It's just available for what's happening. Yeah, so there's many, many ways. You know, you work on the perception and then you can just work really at the centre of the mind. I just inquire because you'll reveal a lot about the way your mind works. You just notice your relationship to sound. You know, it will be the same with everything. So it's a potent thing just to notice, you know. Because it will be the same with people. The ones that are natural like the streams and the ones that are more like the sound of the traffic. So to get so that all of it's welcome.
you know, you get, so all of it is welcome. Boundless mind.
It all becomes a stream.
Yeah, that's right. And a stream that stops.
A stream of stops?
A stream that stops.
Oh, sorry, that stops. I'm still tuning into your
accent.
Non-California accent. It's like a stream.
Yeah. No, you're good to keep asking.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
So, how can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
So, how to apply that to all of the manifest injustice in the world that we're confronted with daily?
It's a hard one, isn't it? Because it all of it says we should be doing something. Yeah. But in terms of the teaching, the first thing that we need to do is feel here. So that we come out of the hindrances, out of aversion, out of wanting. Yeah. Because as long as the mind is clouded with hindrances, with anger, with wanting things one way, not wanting them the other, we're not actually seeing clearly. So any action will come out of confusion and out of ignorance. So the first thing is to clear the mind, and then from that place, something will naturally come. So, the first work is here, and then it moves out from there. But it's painful to have to sit and just feel some of the things that are happening and what they do to the heart. But it's the first work. So a sense of, this is the karma of this time. This is the results of what has gone before. Given what has been happening, it couldn't be otherwise. So in that way we make peace. And from that place, what's needed becomes obvious. So the movement doesn't come out of aversion and fighting. It comes out of this deep recognition of karma. Very cooling. In the terms of the recollection of Brahma Vihara, the finest kind of love is equanimity, and it comes from the recognition of karma. That as beings act, so they will reap the results.
So you see this as an individual act primarily, then?
I think it's more than that, but I think as a one being here, it happens here, but then its resonance moves out. And the more each of us is actually really opening to what is going on, then the more the possibility of transformation becomes possible. One of the real problems we see is nobody's prepared to look straight. What's actually really happening is so difficult that nobody will look directly at it. And so it's very hard to get true action when there's no clear seeing. And so, I don't know if you know the whole sense of morphic resonance, or the 100th monkey. When one being does something, when another being does something, there's a certain critical point where it's understood everywhere. And I experience that with things, that if you start to wake up and the person beside you starts to wake up, it becomes the dominant paradigm. But it can be lonely work, so it's important to do it with people who are also on the same journey. So the discouragement, don't lose heart. Yeah, we'll have to be, it's just coming up 9. So if anyone needs to go, please feel welcome to go, and I'll just answer the last couple of questions.
I was wondering if you could talk sort of concretely about how you deal with somebody disrespecting you, because I think that it's always easier to be good when other people are being good.
Yeah.
And so I find myself that's when I really, that's the most challenging thing as you're going along. You're really sort of like trying to bring your consciousness, and then somebody, flips you off or just like slams you in. How do I be good? How do I do it then?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, how do you really live this stuff?
No, but I mean, specifically about somebody not treating you extending the same sort of whatever to you.
Yeah, so it's something, certainly as a nun within this tradition, I have worked with. And as a senior member of the community, it's certainly something I also have to work with, that just, the first thing, of course, is always to feel it. But then I look, and if someone's treating me rough, I think, well, it's actually just a reflection on them. It's got nothing to do with me. So I don't take it on. I leave it where it belongs. It's not my business. There's a famous Sufi story of what's his name? Nasruddin, and he was away, and if I don't know whether you could say friend, but a mate came along and wrote on his door something like rotten pig and went off. And then Nasruddin came home, saw the writing on his door, went in, and a bit later this fellow came along again and knocked, and knocked and said to Nasruddin, I came and visited you before and you went home. And Nasruddin said, yes, I saw you left your name on the door. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. But you always have to know where it belongs, but also feel what it feels like. And you can hear the mind go, they should have done this, they shouldn't be doing that, Actually, the thing I see living, a long time in community, people only act in ways that are painful to other people from their own suffering. Yeah. If they're actually okay, they act beautifully. So it's whether you can, rather than just being concerned with what's happening here, recognise what might be happening there. So the people who treat me roughest, and some people do, are usually in a really contracted, painful state themselves. Does that make sense?
Do you ever notice that when you take, when you take your attention away, you'll like snap? It's like if something hard's happening and you bring your attention to it and you're there with it, and then something else goes away and you weren't sort of prepared for it or whatever, and then you just like snap I don't know, and because you're not, you weren't, I don't know how to say it. Like, if you're having a difficult conversation with somebody and you're really bringing your attention to it and being respectful to the person and everything, and then you get in your car and you go to do something else and something happens you weren't prepared for, and then it's sort of like the tension from that sort of comes out somewhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's...
Yeah. It can be like that, can't it? And the secret or the trick gets to be to be, just be more and more conscious in the present moment and, you know, in a sense not accumulating the tension. You know, so you're present with your own response. You may not be saying anything, yeah? You know, so you're having a difficult conversation and you're really in your guts feeling how much... It's painful, you know. Either you feel angry, you feel fearful, you know, whatever's happening, you're actually very present with it. And then it doesn't tend to accumulate in the same way. But if you're being, you know, superficially okay, you know, managing this difficult conversation, but not acknowledging to yourself what it's actually feeling like, then you do get a back reaction. And it takes, you know, it takes skill. I mean, it's partly what we're training ourselves in meditation for, so we have enough strength and presence of mind to be able to be with something difficult and to maintain a reference to our own body and heart. Yeah. So you never lose yourself. Whatever's going on, you always... You always know what it feels like. Then things don't accumulate in the same way. But yes, just then to recognise, poof, you know, I've built up some tension. Yeah. It doesn't need to be more than that, really, does it? You know, and recognise, well, you're in a difficult conversation, you didn't lose it. You know, so to rejoice in that. That you didn't then just dump your own tension or agitation onto the other person. Yeah? And that's quite an accomplishment in itself. But you've got to be careful that, you know, you're not then disallowing yourself. You're really honouring yourself in the whole thing. You're not just being good, you know. Yeah, being good is not really the point. You know, what we're really here to do is to wake up. And the two things can support each other, or one can slightly undermine the other. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Enough, eh?
Anda mayam dhamma kataya saru karam dharamase sadhu sadhu sadhu
So if I can just end by giving a short blessing.
Vityo vipajantu savarogo inasattu Ate bhavan vantarayo sukhitikayuko bhava Avivadana sirisani changura pachayino Chattaro dhamma varanti ayu vanno sukham phalam.
Very lovely to have the opportunity to come here and be with you all. And I wish you strength and courage in your practice.